Football season's only just begun, and it's already gotten very spicy. Romo's already gone. 2-0? 2-0, my God, we have no quarterback. America's favorite one-week fantasy football site is DraftKings.com. One-week fantasy, that means no season-long commitments. Millionaires are being crowned all season long. One-week fantasy means there's no commitments. You don't have to sit in the basement with your sweaty buddies. You can do it at home on your computer, and then you can bail, and then you can come back, and then you can bail, and then you can come back. It's the best. It's fantasy football on demand. Play where you want, when you want, with the players you want. You can be in your car, not driving because that's illegal, so like pulled over in park, and you can play fantasy football. You can play when you're sitting on a little chair watching your chick shop. You can play fantasy football in a helicopter or at a water park if you have a phone that's water resistant. You could start a running back as you're going down a water slide. And with $1 million up for grabs every week, every game is a big game and every play matters. So 1st and 10 in the first quarter feels like 4th and goal with 1 second left. And a long touchdown run could be more than just a victory for your favorite team. It could mean you've just turned your love of football into $1 million payday as you're going down a water slide. Imagine it. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use promo code LAUGH. That's L-A-U-G-H to play for free for a shot at $1 million. $1 million. Enter LAUGH for free entry now, only at DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com. But you don't spell dot, you just actually put a dot. Like a little period, like a little bing, like a little dot. And good luck to you.
Right, so, okay, of course love is a subset of, you know, various electromagnetic forces, sure. But it's a thing, you know, it exists.
I think that should be on your business card. I think that love is a subset of various electromagnetic forces.
Yes. Kevin Nickerson, divorce attorney. Yeah.
Why didn't they laugh?
You suck!
Welcome to another episode of Why Didn't They Laugh? This is a great, great one. As you just heard, that was Andy Weir, the writer of the novel The Martian, that is now starring Matt Damon, coming out very soon. We got to sit down with him. The other voice you heard was my friend, fellow comedian, and nuclear physicist, Kevin Hickerson. He's been on this podcast several times, and we got to sit down with Andy Weir, and it was a real blast, and we'll get to that in a sec. Things are good. I've been getting a lot of great emails and letters from you guys at whydidntheylaughpodcast@gmail.com. Some of them are very touching. Like, people have been through some tough stuff and they enjoy listening to this and laughing. Some from comedians, who are scared of bombing on stage. And I think listening to me bomb makes them feel better. I can't reiterate enough that there's no right answer in comedy. I have no answers whatsoever. None. No one does. That's the whole point of this. Is at no point in your life as a comedian do you ever know what will work or what won't work. You get better at it, but there's always a fight against the void of the unknown, which is cool because it plays into this episode, because that's what The Martian is about. The Martian is about a guy who's stuck on Mars, and the rover left, his people left, and he has to stay alive by himself on Mars until he can potentially be rescued. It is phenomenal. It's straight up geek nerd porn that got picked up by the wave of international popularity. It's been translated into 44 languages, New York Times bestseller, got made into a movie like within 18 months, which is unheard of. It's just this blockbuster of a movie and a book. And I read the book and it was phenomenal. And so being able to sit down with Andy and Kevin was great, because I'm also doing another podcast called Surely You're Joking with Kevin, which is all about physics. And yeah, you'll see. It's these dudes are smart, doesn't even begin to describe it. They're on a whole different, I mean, they start like almost physics battling where there's like mic drops. But we'll get to that. What was I just talking about? Oh, yeah, there's no answer. There's no answers. So I appreciate that you guys look, you know, this is encouraging for your comedy, but I don't know shit. All I know is the battle against my own void, which is that silence after a joke doesn't work, and you wonder why. I saw a friend I haven't seen in a while at the Improv the other night, and she hasn't seen me do stand-up in a while, and she was like, wow, the crowd kind of sucked, but you didn't get mad. And I was like, yeah, why would I get mad? She's like, well, you used to always get mad. And then I started thinking, this podcast has helped my anger, because in analyzing all these jokes not working and what causes them to not work, I'm starting to realize that very little in this life is personal. It's environmental. And also doing this other podcast about science, you really see how environmental everything is. That when someone, you know, half the time when you think someone's attacking you, they're not at all. And it's all in your head. And then your reaction to the perceived threat actually creates a conflict that didn't originally exist. And because of this podcast, I spend hours analyzing these things that I never would have done in the past. And I've come to a lot of great conclusions that the world is not as personal as you think it is. The last episode I did about, it was called Good Grief. It was about doing comedy at someone's memorial at the Improv. I got a little, it was personal, it was emotional. And people wrote to me about their stuff they're dealing with in their life, and it was cool. And one thing I do want to address is I talked about, you know, my mom leaving the Catholic Church when we were younger, and I had some pretty not great things to say about Catholicism. And that's just because of my upbringing in the town I'm from and what I saw and the hypocrisy and the bullshit. And some people wrote to me that I should look into this new pope. So I started reading some of his speeches, and I'm very happy to say that it seems like things are kind of turning around a little for the Catholics, which is awesome, because you never want to see a religion or a group or a culture based on some sickness and a lie and greed, which is how I always view Catholics, not the people, but the institution. It's based around land and greed and lies. But this new pope, he's rejecting the opulence of the Pope Mobile, and he actually goes out on the people and he hugs babies and he accepts homosexuality and birth control. And he seems like he really is bringing that sense of spirituality to people that religion should do. And so I'm very happy to say that not that my opinion matters at all, but I'm a lot more open-minded to Catholicism as a structure. Because these are the people that would kill you if you said that the earth wasn't the center of the universe. You know, they've been wrong more than Blockbuster at this point, and they just can't seem to go out of business. They're like the IRS. But this guy seems inspiring. He's got a Bobby Kennedy flair to him, where it's like he's putting himself at risk because he knows that there's more things that matter than just his life. And I respect the hell out of that. And I'm always open-minded to see things differently. And if the Catholic Church is willing to accept people for their sexuality and accept women for their sovereignty over their own bodies, and they hug and they kiss and they touch people based on love, and, you know, that's all great. I'm down. It doesn't mean I'm Catholic, but I'm not going to talk shit anymore. Okay, let's get into this Andy Weir stuff. What should we open with? What? There's so many. I took some excerpts from the full interview that's on the Surely You're Joking podcast, but I can give kind of commentary on some of the stuff right now. Okay, this is just a little taste of what kind of dudes these are. This is them talking about
go back 30
stuff.
Years, right?
Yep, yep.
So 10
which
of the
you're
a programmer,
so you know that one. Yeah. That's totally a programmer.
Does the DeLorean count as weight, or is that
well,
the
yeah,
mass?
Oh, sure. Yeah, so absolutely. What is the total mass of a DeLorean plus
it's
all
probably
those
probably one metric ton.
Right, so maybe 1,000 kilograms, 10 to the ninth. So you're looking at 10 to the 12th. 12. So a gigaware.
Yeah.
Is about what
so
he
awesome.
Used. No.
Teraware. Oh my God, I love it.
There you go.
And that also gives you a nice conversion from 1.21 gigawatts.
Gigawatts.
They say gigawatts in that.
Well, there
okay.
we go. Yeah, that's
yeah.
Good.
So you
could
actually
point.
Do a conversion. Let's say the lightning flash lasted 10 seconds. Maybe
10 seconds.
Well, maybe
well,
one
no,
second.
Well, in the movie, it actually lasted. So we're using the physics that exist within that universe, right?
Okay.
Because ours is a little different. That lightning bolt lasted a good long time, right?
Okay.
So probably call it a good second.
A good
that's
second. Good. Okay.
So that means you have got 1.2 times 10 to the ninth joules.
Uh-huh. And
right.
with that, you could
you
know,
can
get
do
a teraware. That's
like
actually
10 to the 12th. So it's actually very efficient. You
that's
can get
super
about,
efficient time machine.
You
right
can get,
I'm
yeah,
very skeptical
you can
that
get
this
about
is going to
well,
work now.
You
like,
can get
I don't
about
think
a, you can
plutonium's
get about
not
a,
enough.
Yeah. You can get like 1,000 weirs for a joule.
Yeah, wow, that's...
Yeah.
I think
I'm
a joule...
I'm filled with hope,
so once,
yeah. Is it a joule like the... I should know this off the top of my head, but like the amount of like paperclip dropping or something?
Well,
like
it would be the energy necessary to accelerate 1 kilogram to 1 meter per second, right?
Yeah, so it's like almost on the order of driving fast.
Yeah.
So, I'm skeptical you're making a time. That's a really eco time machine right there.
Yeah. You actually, I mean, there's a fair amount of kinetic energy in the DeLorean. It's going 88 miles an hour.
Right.
So it's about 40 meters per second. So that's like 1,600 times the mass.
But Michael J. Fox's hair
times,
has drag.
There's about 1.6 million joules of kinetic energy.
I like the willing suspension of disbelief that you have to have with certain literature. Science guys can do it better than most people because you just picture another universe. I noticed that, where it's like, in that universe, that's kind of amazing.
You say that stuff when you're having these discussions, you say like, okay, fine, could Superman throw a potato chip hard enough to get it into orbit? It's like, okay, you accept that Superman himself can do that.
You're given
that.
That's awesome.
The answer is no, it would burn up on the way out.
There you go.
It would, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, potato chip.
Okay, this is so fun to just re-listen to. What they're referring to is Andy Weir, the writer of The Martian, invented his own unit of time travel called the Weir. Just listen to this.
I mean, it would have been nice to have him be called Weirs too. I'm just saying, as a physicist, to throw that out there. So you're going to have to come up with another unit to do that too.
Well, actually, when I was a teenager, I came up with
like
the Weir. A Weir is a unit used for time travel, I decided.
Oh, awesome.
And so one Weir is one... kilogram second. So
that's
in other words,
awesome.
So
I'm going to start using that.
So
I have things where I want to use that.
So, right.
my
so
mind.
If you send 100 kilograms back in time 10 seconds, that's gonna require 1,000 weirs of temporal displacement.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty. The dude came up with his own unit of time travel because the amount of matter you're traveling through a wormhole. I don't know. You saw that. It's intense. But the thing about these dudes that I really like is they take everything so literally that they can have these spirited debates about a universe that doesn't exist in our universe but could potentially. We're talking about movies later, and Andy referenced some romantic movie because he has a real hard time with a lot of romance movies, about some dude who lived in like the 19th century who's communicating with a modern woman in New York through like some sort of thing. And they're like talking about love and all this shit. He was like, couldn't he have told everyone about Hitler or 9/11? Because he viewed it as like, if you have a portal to the future, how are you talking about your feelings and not impending doom? So right now what they're debating is how many gigaweirs or teraweirs it would take to transport the DeLorean and Back to the Future. Because they've established that Back to the Future is in a universe with rules. And if those rules match, then they just perceive it as reality. You know, it's some interesting shit. Okay. This is me, because I wanted to find out what he thought, because The Martian is very technical. Like sometimes it reads like a textbook, because he's trying to solve problems to get off of Mars. He's trying to stay alive. And now that I know Andy, he's very into math and science and just these type of very technical things. But obviously this story took off and found itself a monster audience. So I asked him why.
You're fighting with Apple, that's cool too. Apple's nice.
Yeah. How do you think your book hit mass audiences so well? Because it's so technical. What do you think was the emotional aspect of it that people related to in all aspects of life?
I'm still trying to figure out what I did right. Because when I wrote it, I wasn't planning on, I wasn't writing it for the mainstream audience. I was writing it for a small core group of dorks that were my readers. I had about 3,000 of them on my mailing list. And I think people just really liked the main character. They could get behind him and they could really root for him and stuff.
Well, I thought he was awesome in that he really went back to the kind of astronaut that people want. Like somebody who's really smart, but also just has this kind of fuck you attitude when he needs it. You know, it's just like, we're trying to do something here. Let's do it. And, you know, people love that.
I got a theory.
Yeah.
I think it's about battling hopelessness. I think that's what people can latch on to. If they know nothing about science, it's you against the void. And how good his attitude was is what made it. Like, that was one of his adaptations that made him so successful, is that he could be funny. Speaking of, how much do you love humor?
I do. I love humor. I mean,
there's a lot of great jokes in that.
Thanks. Well, that was critical because there's a lot of scientific information that I had to lay on the reader. So there's just tons and tons of exposition.
Yeah.
And without the humor, it would have read like a Wikipedia article.
Yeah. Right. I love that about it. Yeah. Because it's just like, it has all the nerd porn and then just like, there's a great punchline.
A joke.
Because he could make himself laugh. Yeah. It'd be easy to be hopeless in that situation.
Right. And I totally appreciate that because as a physicist comedian, like I need this as an outlet and I've never been happier since I started doing this part of it. So I appreciate it.
So that's what it's self versus hopelessness. Because that's the conflict. Conflict between protagonist, you know, man versus man versus something. This is man versus the void. And that's what people relate to, because we all have a void in our lives somehow, whatever that is, whether it's depression or your job or just some aspect of your life where you just feel this sense of hopelessness. And to watch this extreme situation where someone's on a planet that's hostile to life and he's all alone and he still survives. And humor is such a major factor in the story. Okay, this made me laugh. Here's a couple clips of mine and Andy's dynamic that started building.
There and
well, the word nuclear
is very
people.
Scary. And yeah, Owen and I talked about that because he sent me a picture on Facebook, or not me, but you know, posted on Facebook. And you're always bringing up the three power plants.
Yeah, because I'm from Oswego, New York, and you can get a 4-bedroom house there for like $60,000, and it's beautiful. Like the area, there's a harbor, and I'm always like, why don't people want to live here? And it's because there's just the looming Springfield-esque Simpsons nuclear reactors there. And then I post, it's like, oh yeah, these frightening things. And Kevin immediately is up there. He's like, it's actually way safer than coal.
It is. It's way safer than coal.
It's way safer, yeah.
It's like, first off, you're not breathing, you know, the output of the reactor, you know,
which
right
is
now.
Ironically radioactive. A lot of people don't know that. Coal and uranium are frequently mined from the same ore.
Wow.
So there's actually uranium oxide when you burn coal, quite radioactive.
It's more radioactive.
Well, it's not more radioactive.
And coal causes global warming, which nuclear doesn't.
Yep.
Well, also, when was the last time you heard about like 31 uranium miners trapped in a cave?
Right,
you know?
Right. Like, or a platform burning up or something. Yeah,
my grandfather's a miner. He only had seven fingers. Die of the Black Lung.
Yeah, so look.
Dale Troy, yo.
So when, you know, when an event like...
Things get dark whenever you start talking.
Yeah.
You're like, my grand... It's like, oh, let's talk about nuclear reactors. My grandfather died of the Black Lung.
Black Lung.
You mentioned the...
Thanks, man.
That, I take that as quite a compliment, that a guy who wrote a book about someone being trapped on Mars called me dark. One time Robin Williams told my brother that he was really intense. My brother still takes that as one of the biggest compliments he's ever heard. Cause it, you know, Robin Williams is one of the most intense people ever. And after like an hour conversation with my brother at the Improv in Hollywood, my brother's like, you know, if you're like in the Philippines and you find like a bird of paradise and there's an economics and Robin Williams just goes, man, you're really, really intense. And my brother still talks about it. Okay, here's another.
Here's well, that's why we need callers. We need fair callers.
Yeah.
We need
space is boring. Yeah. It's empty, like my soul.
That's why we need to start. We're
back to being dark. There we
go. Yeah, I like making them laugh. I like being the dark guy. So we're having this great conversation, and I got to start asking questions because these people know stuff that is on the cutting edge. Like there's stuff coming out around the corner that is pretty mind-blowing. And at the same time, they laugh and enjoy the same type of shit as like my buddies who work in, you know, factories or janitors. Like people have more similarities than they think. So here's a little clip talking about some exciting stuff, and you know, we're also just sure dudes being dudes.
We were talking about that before we started recording.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to recap. Okay. That's so fascinating.
Well, so my dad is an accelerator physicist, and he was after he retired from working at the lab, he joined a project. I don't think that company got off the ground, but basically, protons, when you accelerate them up to relativistic speed and shoot them at matter, they go through, they just kind of like ignore a lot of the matter that they should be colliding with, and they just kind of go through it for a bit, and then once they've gone through a certain amount based on their energy, they just kind of give up and yield all of their energy at once. This is extremely useful because it means you can, if someone has like an inoperable brain tumor, you can shoot a stream of protons into their head and with exactly the right amount of energy to just harmlessly pass through the intervening brain matter and then just yield all their energy in the tumor. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think it's called proton therapy. I'm not sure.
Yep.
Anyway.
They used to have a facility like that at Los Alamos. Not when I was there, but they had it there.
So the bad news is it takes a warehouse-sized, accelerator to get the protons doing that. You need to strap the patient to a table, immobilize their head, and then the whole table and patient move around such that they're aligned correctly for the beam of protons. What Dad was working on was they were trying to miniaturize that. They wanted to make something that could move around the patient. Mm-hmm. And
like what the Ghostbusters had. They had little proton packs.
Yeah. You'd want something a little more precise than those, I think. Yeah. But they were hoping to invent something that like every hospital could have.
Yeah.
Because people, the proton therapy stuff is so big, so expensive, and time-consuming that people die while they're on the waiting list.
Yeah.
So you could save a lot of lives and simplify a lot of operable surgeries, even. Like, so it'd be like, well, you have a brain tumor. It's risky, but our only option is to go in and surgically remove it. It'd be like, well, now it's not risky because we can just shoot it with protons.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So at Los Alamos, we had a similar issue. We have a half-mile-long accelerator, and they used to do proton therapy there, but, yeah, it's just too expensive. You can't fund the accelerator with, you know, keeping people alive, because that's just... it's cheaper to spend that money on trying to make a deliverable proton accelerator like your dad was trying to
do.
And that really should have more funding, in my opinion.
I get so mad at Congress. I mean, the Pentagon spends $150 million a year on boner pills.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, in terms of, like, via the health care coverage for the soldiers?
Yeah. I guess everyone needs a boner. Sorry. It's all good.
It's like your bumper sticker. You gotta
full bellies, empty balls.
Yeah, you gotta empty them somewhere. I do a joke where I talk about simulating these beams of proteins that you're talking about. It's really
protons.
Protons, sorry. Okay. Did I say proteins?
Well,
sorry.
Beams of proteins. We were just talking about empty balls, right?
Yeah. Did Watney ever account for that?
That's good.
Did Watney ever what?
Account for, you know, if you ever had a session, like the protein that he lost.
It's not a lot.
Yeah,
I suppose you could always recycle it.
Yeah,
I gotta say that was, I was worried that might even count as a science error in that book. I didn't hear you mention.
Well, we can presume he was taking care of business himself and just
didn't log it.
Didn't want to share it with the
right. Dave, you know, Saul 41
just lost a couple nanograms of protein. Yeah. I don't want to say how or why, but let's just say there's two mountains in the distance that look familiar.
Right, or even worse, like had to reclaim that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reclaiming protein.
Please delete.
Put it in the compost. Yeah. Yeah.
The potatoes taste pretty weird.
Day 41, potatoes are sprouting FAP 3 times.
How great is that? That's why it's important to fund science, because you never know what's going to come out of it. Like, without the theory of relativity, there's no Foursquare, there's no Google Maps, because there's a jump between satellites and the Earth as far as time. There's nanosecond differences, and that is because of the distance from the gravitational center. Einstein came up with all this stuff. Without that knowledge, you can't have any modern technology. So sometimes when these people sound very abstract and people are like, I care about, you know, putting food on my table, and these people are talking gibberish shit, it's like, that gibberish shit will put food on your table. So just know that it's there, and that it's very important to fund science. I don't believe science is a religion. I don't think you can ever prove truth, like that deep core truth. But I think that it's powerfully, powerfully important. And then, of course, jizz. Hilarious. I literally, as I'm recording this, I just got an email that's so it totally sums up what I was talking about. Sometimes I get really cool compliments that have a little bit of thanks. I just got one from someone named Peter. And by the way, Peter, if you're listening, I totally appreciate this. But it just says, I've recently started listening to your podcast. I've seen you perform. I love your stand-up special, High Five Till It Hurts. I have to say, this last episode was amazing. You come off as a meathead in your comedy. However, your podcast is very insightful and well thought out. Thanks. I see what you're saying now. I've heard that before. When I did Pete Holmes' podcast, he very openly was telling me that he thought I was a meathead. We're all meatheads. That's the funniest part about life. The more honest we are, the more we can just be like, yeah, we're all meatheads. And I think from my last hour special, one of my more meathead jokes was about 9 dicks. Like, what would you do if you had 9 dicks? I did this bit for a long time about what would you do and would you rathers. And I've had like self-proclaimed nerds be like, why do you talk about such like silly things? And I cannot wait to show you guys what happened as I was interviewing Andy Weir. I mean, you can't write this. If you want to look it up, get High Five Till It Hurts. You can get it at comedycentral.com. The 9 dicks joke is, you know, I did it for a few years. I don't do it now because I'm working on another hour. But, and again, Peter, I totally get what you're saying. I'm a huge dude. I'm 6'7". I played sports. I can be very aggressive. I sound like a surfer from the Midwest. My accent makes no sense. I sound really fucking stupid a lot, I swear. I'm obsessed with my own dick. I get it. I get that I come across as a meathead. But I'm also reflective. And I think it's important to realize that we can have many sides to our personalities. But just listen to this shit.
Yeah, well, for that reason. Well, because some of the material, one of the things you're worried about when you irradiate a person is, you know, if how much radiation dose balls will get, because that's a possible genetic error. So it's like a big deal. So you got to know that somehow.
The urge to abuse that simulator.
I know.
Yeah. Like, okay, what if the guy has 9 balls?
Right.
Do the outer balls protect the inner balls?
They would, right? It's so funny you used the number 9. My last hour, I did a joke about what would you do if you had 9 dicks. Like, it's weird that you just said 9. What is the draw to 9?
Can
I jerk off with each dick?
Exactly!
Well, that's the first thing I need to know.
And then you have one gay dick. Oh, I... yeah. No, it's like literally one of my long jokes of my last special was like, you have four, do they have different personalities? Like, they attract a different thing, you know?
Oh, yeah, different fetishes.
Exactly.
Like, oh, I saw a redhead go by and three of my dicks got
hard. Right, and one didn't. And he, and that one only goes up when I'm at the gym. Turns out it's a gay dick.
There was a guy on Reddit who did an AMA a while ago, a rather famous one. He had two dicks.
Really?
And he, yeah. Yeah, oh, it's awesome. The birth defect that you can have. And he showed a picture. He sent a picture. He's like, here are my two dicks. And then he just answered a bunch of questions.
Wait, a guy who posted a picture of his dick and sent it to people?
Yeah, on the internet. Two dicks, I know, it's hard
though.
To believe.
I know, that's weird.
That becomes like a novelty. Weird. It's no longer bizarre.
Yeah, that could be a thing.
It's so bizarre, it's not bizarre.
He's bisexual, so maybe he's just got one dick of each orientation. Wow. I don't know.
Or he's just, they're both very satisfied.
Or they're both, neighbors. He has two bisexual dicks.
Can he be monogamous with two people for each dick?
Like, oh, honey, I'm not cheating right, on you. No, this dick. Dick. Yeah. I only use this dick for you, baby.
Right. Right. That's the married dick, right. And that that's dick's partying.
Well, actually, you joke, but there was another article I saw about a woman who had multiple vaginas. Well, she had one vagina, but multiple, you know, everything beyond the opening right. Is like two completely different vaginal orifices, cervixes, cervix, yeah. And two sets of over, like two complete. Right. Reproduction systems. And so, but she says, like, well, she's saving one of them for marriage.
No way! That's real!
So you just go in, she just tells her, you know, boyfriend, oh, okay, you know, go to the left, you know.
He's like, but baby, I hook right. You knew that.
You knew that.
I told you at the bar, I hook right. I can't change who I am.
I thought it was a weird question at the time, but now I understand.
Yeah. I finally get why you asked me that.
When you posted
you mean
that...
stage right or camera right? Right.
Well, well, well. It looks like we don't have that much. It looks like we have more in common than we all think we do, huh? That the big, bad meathead may be onto something with some of his thoughts. I got a couple more. I just got one more clip to play, and then that's going to be it. But, yeah, I love this dude. You got to see The Martian when it comes out. I cannot wait to see this movie. I am on tour a ton right now, and I would love for you to come. This is coming out today, right now. I'm at Ontario Improv tonight. I don't think this may not come out in time for tonight, but tomorrow, two shows, Sunday, two shows. Next week, I'm back in Pittsburgh. I was on Sullivan and Son on TBS for 3 years, and... it was set in Pittsburgh, and that city has given us so much love. It's amazing. So, yeah, Pittsburgh, come out. And then after that, I'm doing a bunch of rock clubs all over the Northeast. I'm doing Toronto. I'm doing Burlington. I'm doing Vienna, Virginia near D.C. I'm doing, Burlington, Brooklyn, Albany. You can get these tickets at owenbenjamin.com. That's my website. I think I can save you like a dollar. They're not expensive. They're either like between 15 and 25 bucks. A lot of them are 15 or 20. So it's a night of great comedy. It's I will play you piano. I'll do stand-up. I will be the meathead you need me to be, or I'll get deep about topics if I've had a lot of caffeine. But either way, I'm there for you. So owenbenjamin.com, get tickets. Email me, whydidn'tthelaughpodcast@gmail.com. Yes, I want to hear from you. Subscribe to this, rate it, comment on it, spread the word. I am having so much fun with this. And then the other podcast is Surely You're Joking, which we've already interviewed a Nobel Prize winner. We just interviewed Kip Thorne, who did all the science for Interstellar. That's what we were joking about in the very beginning, where the science of love. Anyway, it's about Interstellar. But here is... We start talking about the algorithms of jokes. You have no idea. I love this shit. I love this shit. Check this out.
Find an equation, like an algorithm to a joke thing, and you still like it. Like yeah. South Park. Yeah. Like, I'm like, they say something absolutely insane, and then prove it somehow, and it's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I love South Park.
Well,
I
even like South Park's deconstruction of Family Guy was right. Oh, he's
manatees.
And yeah, that was great. Yeah.
That was great. Was and that's actually a pretty fucking good way to write jokes.
It is.
And it works.
Gary Coleman.
It's like, I wanted to go and like write code.
Did you see
to
Funny
do that.
Bob? See, the episode with Funny Bob?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Penis. Mexican vagina. Like that one.
Yeah, I love that. It's one of the best ever.
Because they were making fun of the Comedy Awards. Because it was like a paradox. Where it's like, you can't take yourself seriously to get an award as a comedian, and it's about comedian. You know, it was like this.
Wait, are you going to Pittsburgh? When do you go to Pittsburgh?
October 1st.
Okay, that's pretty soon. But if we can go at the same time, there's somebody I know there who's working on a funny bot, and just every time
right?
I see that,
they're really doing that. Yeah. Are they doing like?
Yeah, yeah. No, she's at Carnegie Mellon. You know, I think we can.
What's the equation? How do you do that?
Well, I don't know. Well, we can talk about it. It's not easy.
Word frequencies.
Word frequencies. Some sort of Markov chain.
Markov chains.
Yeah,
Markov
chains all the way.
Did you
Absolutely.
Hear about the Jew who walked into a lesbian? Whatever. It's just like.
It'd be great too if you train it, you know, like Google's Deep Dream, you know, it's like you train like this is okay for the college crowd. This is like if you go to this is Nashville humor. This is like San Francisco humor. Like no, sorry, that was offensive. Come on, it was just a joke. You know,
like, you're in Nashville. It's like, did you hear about the black guy? And then you go to San Francisco. Did you hear about the Republican?
Yeah, right.
Just keep shifting it, like depending on where you're at.
Like fill in the blank.
Yeah. Just a little cloud.
You're in Philadelphia. It's like, did you hear about the New York Giants fan?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, we got to figure out how they're programming these.
I need to know that because I just want to steal the programming. Yeah, myself right.
Well, that's what I wanted it for too.
Yeah.
I love reading anti jokes online. Like, I just for some reason, they're hilarious to me. I don't know why.
Give me
but
example.
It's like, man walks into a bar. He's an alcoholic, and it's ruining his family.
Oh, yeah. I spent a whole day once replying to every men's humor thing as if they were not joking. But it's like, the thing about being a guy is, I'm like, you sound really depressed. And I just kept responding like it wasn't a joke, and it made me laugh so hard. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying.
Oh, that's funny.
A horse walks into a bar and says, I'll have a gin and tonic. And the bartender says, holy shit, a talking horse.
Right. That's awesome. What did the kid in the wheelchair get for Christmas? Cancer. Exactly that.
Yeah, I know.
It's,
yeah.
It's got to be bad.
Like cruelty.
I don't actually root for that. Everyone. It just has to
Error.
Human empathy does not allow.
All right, I'm going to read another one just to keep it going.
Shit, a talking horse.
Yeah. So we're in Silicon Valley. The Bay Area is probably, this is a phenomenon up here in
knock,
LA.
Knock, knock would be good too, though. I don't mean to cut you off. Knock, knock. Who's there? Andy, your friend.
Yeah.
Like you just like answered. Right, sorry, I won't.
Andy Weir. Yeah.
Yeah. You told me to come over too.
Yeah.
Your doorbell's broken.
My kids write jokes like that too. Like my kids write some super literal jokes.
Literal is so funny. Like in that movie Guardians of the Galaxy, the literal character made me laugh so hard.
Oh yeah.
Drax.
Love that.
Yeah, my son wrote this was his, he kept bugging me with it after it got a little old, but he was like, knock knock, and I'm like, who's there? And he goes, it's your son.
He burst out.
All right, guys, that was a good time. Yeah, trying to do the science of comedy is very difficult. It's very subjective. No one knows what the hell is going to work and what isn't. You just got to be super, I guess, honest about your point of view. At the same time, just being funny. I don't know. No one knows. But this podcast is dedicated to finding that out and meeting very interesting people along the way. And learning how to deal with my own anger. So see me live, owenbenjamin.com. Get tickets. Write to me, whydidn'tthelivepodcast@gmail.com. Much respect to Kevin Hickerson and Andy Weir. Go see The Martian in theaters. It's going to be insanely good, and read the book because we can beat the void. We can beat that void. Much love.